Well, hello out there in Radio Land. It's time for yours truly, Adam Lepp, on WWGH, the talking place. And this program is going to be so fantabulous. We will probably play it multiple times. So whether you are listening at the new Computer Guy time of 12:13 p.m. Eastern Daylight, or listening to Mid-Morning Coffee Break, mid-morning on Monday, about 10:13 a.m. EDT, I welcome you as a consumer of the dulcet tones that are emanating via the airwaves of WWGH Radio. I think that makes quite a bit of sense. And we bring to the microphones a gentleman with more education than myself, more years, but really not that many. And every year it seems like we get closer and closer in age, and we are from a percentage basis. So I guess that sort of counts. We go to the Sunshine State of Florida. And yes, you are correct, Dr. Ron L. Feinman, where L stands for lots of great radio and lots of laughter, joins me on the program. And in case you forgot, I call him Ron, whereas for some odd reason, Scott and Glenn and others call him Dr. Feinman, even though he told Glenn to call him Ron. So, Ronald, how are you on this fine day?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
Well, fairly fantastic, or as I used to say, acceptable.
Fairly fantastic.
Slightly irrespectable. So, Ron, we received the news that Glenn is retiring, even though you're very slightly his senior. You were on with him for a couple years or so, and
obviously 2 years, yes.
It's going to be different than being on with me, as you and I agree on some things. We probably laugh a little more, and you and Glenn agree on almost everything, but not quite almost everything, because, you know, there's always going to be some disagreement, even if it's moderate. So I presume you very much enjoyed your tenure with Glenn here on our airwaves.
I have to say that Glenn was a lot of fun to be with. I really enjoyed being with him. You know, we agreed on a lot, and we had some really good discussions. But I've had good discussions also with you, Adam, and definitely with Scott. So all of you, in different ways, I've had a good experience with.
Yeah, definitely some contrasts in the hosting with me. You never quite know, because sometimes we surprise each other and agree more than we think we do, and sometimes we're ready to swear at each other. And Scott never really gives his opinion on anything, even though he did say his favorite.
Right.
He did say his favorite president is the one who shares your first name, and you and he probably wouldn't agree on that. But that's one of the very few political opinions that he has provided.
Yeah, I think he says that, Scott, because he was born in that administration. I think that's why.
Yes.
Like I was born in the FDR administration, the end of it.
Yeah,
but I mean,
just shortly,
he's my favorite president, so I have a feeling that's connected to it.
Yeah.
But I guess you would not say Lyndon Johnson's your favorite president, is
he? Probably not, because I really didn't remember much of him. I go with Clinton.
Yeah, well, I didn't either with FDR. And I don't think Scott remembered Reagan very much, because he was only maybe 6 or 7 at the end. But yeah, but there's a tendency, I think, in many cases, for people to like the person that they were born under.
If I can properly look at the timeline, he was born just a few weeks after Reagan took office.
Yes.
And goodness sakes, when I started college, the peanut president, as we call him, who's still living, that makes me feel a little less old when the president, Ron, who was in office when I started college, is still living. Of course, he's almost 100 years old. So
he's going to be 98 on October 1, and on August 18th, Rosalind's going to be 95. She's almost 3 years younger, and she's already passed Nancy Reagan and Lady Bird Johnson. The only person who's lived longer is Bess Truman.
So on this particular program, I'm sorry to disappoint the people that want to hear conflict. We're not going to debate about masks or vaccines or about the Donald or about who's better looking, Melania or Jackie Kennedy or Michelle Obama, etc. Well, we actually might talk about the first ladies and which one's best looking, because that's kind of non-controversial. I mean, even if you say Melania is pretty, doesn't mean you like her. You might say she was pretty useless, but you might also say she was just pretty in general. So we may talk about that, but I promise you it's a no mask, no vaccine zone. But you never know. Maybe on a future show, Ron and I will provide a warning that the show is unsuitable for sensitive ears. We might yell at each other about that. But for now, we're going to talk about some good topics and also pick Ron's brain, as he is quite the expert on presidential history. In fact, I have invented a word. You know, speaking of Donald, he invents words. So if the president can do it, so can I. Since I have more education than the president does anyway, I decided to call Ron a presidentologist. So
yes, and I love that word.
So, Ron, for those who didn't listen to you and Glenn and Scott over the last couple of years, just tell us a bit about your education. Remind us what you wrote your PhD thesis in, and tell us a bit about the book that you wrote that's quite popular through Rowan. I think it's called Rowan Littlefield.
Okay. Well, I did my undergraduate work at Queens College at the City University of New York, and I did my doctoral degree at the City University of New York Graduate School, and my dissertation advisor was Arthur Schlesinger Jr., the very famous historian who worked under Presidents Kennedy and Johnson, and also advised Robert Kennedy and George McGovern. And I wrote my dissertation on something, as you won't really find anymore among Republicans, the progressive Republican senators and the New Deal. Imagine, back then they were progressive Republicans, not all right-wing conservative Republicans, and they were in the Midwest, and there was a group of 12 of them, and I did a study of all 12 and how they agreed at times with FDR and the New Deal, and other times they didn't, and in foreign affairs, except for Senator George Norris of Nebraska, they were all isolationists. And in a way, that sounds to me like Josh Hawley now, who voted against NATO membership for Finland and Sweden. The only member, the man is really off the wall, I think, Josh Hawley, H-A-W-L-E-Y. He's, you know, and he's had a lot of people repudiate him already. But I'm saying today, the Republican Party, at least on issues like NATO, they're not isolationists. But Robert Taft was in the 1940s. He was. So, you know, there's always that element in the Republican Party. But anyway, that was my dissertation, and it was published by Johns Hopkins University Press. And I started my teaching career in 1972, so I'm in my 51st year this fall. I'm starting this fall at Florida Atlantic University again, and it's literally year 51. I can't believe it. I'm only doing one course a term on the U.S. presidency each term, but I enjoy it. I love it. And I do lectures and all that before senior citizen groups, and I also do lifelong learning for Florida Atlantic University at three different campuses. I'll be speaking about different presidents throughout the year. And I also, of course, did publish my book on presidential assassinations and threats, which came to me from Roman Littlefield, the publisher. I was aware of them, but they contacted me through the FAU email, and they noticed I had given lectures years ago on presidential assassinations and presidents, and they said, "Would you like to write a book?" And I said, "Fine." You know, and I was retired full time, so I had more freedom. So between 2013 and 2015, I did the research and the writing and all the other work that's involved before it's published, and it came out in 2015 as Assassinations, Threats, and the American Presidency, from Andrew Jackson to Barack Obama. And it covered right up through 2014 with threats against Obama, because it was being published at the beginning of 15. And then in 2017, it came out in paperback. So, and I actually use it in my presidency class. And, you know, and it's gotten a lot of good reviews on Amazon. And so I've written two books, and I've taught for 50 years, and I've done hundreds of lectures. And I've been on your show, and also Scott and Glenn, and also was on a show with Gwen and others, the Sunday Show, which no longer is existing at this point. But the point is, I keep busy, and it keeps me young, even though I'm 77, going on 78 years of age in December. So that's, how's that for a summary?
Yeah, quite a life history, and the history is still
yes.
In progress. And we appreciate when Ron comes on the show and spews forth his knowledge. And we joke around a bit because, you know, laughter is the best medicine, especially in these crazy times.
I want to point out that I first came on WWGH when Scott asked me to be on in February 2017. for something I projected that turns out to be totally not occurring, I said that Donald Trump would be one of the shortest-term presidents in history. And I wasn't the only one who said it. I wasn't well-known, but there were well-known scholars who said he won't last as long as James A. Garfield, 6 months. But he did, as we know. But, you know, a number of people thought he had a very short time, longer than William Henry Harrison, 31 days, but supposedly less than James Garfield, or if not less than Zachary Taylor, 16 months and 5 days. But unfortunately, from my viewpoint, it didn't work out that way.
We're going to talk about some of the recent presidents and first ladies, and also the concept of the more liberal or progressive Republicans. And although I'm nonpartisan, certainly if you know me, most of my political philosophies are consistent with what would be historically considered the liberal Republicans. That is, I'm certainly fiscally conservative.
Yes.
As I tell people, you know, we're a non-mask zone, but you folks know what I think about masks. But I'm also extremely pro-choice. Doesn't mean I'm in favor of abortion, that I think it's right. I just think
it's the same thing I always say.
It's a woman's body. It's her decision.
I'm not pro-abortion. I want a few of them, but it's still a woman's body, and it's her right to choose. And I want to bring up the New York Times this week had this analysis based on all kinds of information about if there was a vote. Every state, like Kansas had, of all places, a Republican conservative state, 59% want to keep abortion rights, and they have it in their state constitution, that 43 of the 50 states, including Kansas, or 42 others, would actually support keeping abortion rights. And the only ones that would not, meaning less than 50%, for the record, the lowest, and not surprised, I'm sorry to say, Alabama and Mississippi, 44 and 44, Louisiana, 45, Arkansas, 49, Utah, 49, and also Wyoming and Oklahoma, 48. Those are the seven. So five southern states, if you want to count Oklahoma, so like southern, and Wyoming and Utah, meaning places that have very small populations of the whole country, and even they would be, except for Alabama, Mississippi, and also Arkansas and Oklahoma, the others are actually 48 and 49%, close to a majority. And many of them are in the 70s, like California, Oregon is 76%. The northeast of Vermont is, I imagine this is, Vermont is 86%, and New York 73%. So if you gave people the chance to vote, I think that we would not have this crisis the Supreme Court has created.
We're going to talk about some of the politics of the first ladies. And the pro-choice, Ron, is a big one. And that certainly is an issue where you might find very different answers if you poll men versus poll women. You know, we're both men. And you have two sons that you love dearly. Proud of both of them. I have no children, probably won't have any, but you know, the clock still hasn't stopped ticking. But bottom line is, it's a woman's body, it's her choice. And to me, how could a man possibly make that decision? A woman, you know, I can't say I would agree with a woman who is not pro-choice, but at least she is speaking about the kind of body that she possesses. And so there may be
But I don't understand how a woman could say that she wants to force other women to have children. I just don't understand the mentality of women who say that. I know they do and they're sincere, but to me it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I really keep that as one of the great mysteries of the human population. But certainly it does make good fodder for talk shows, editorials, and controversy. And as I say, even if you don't agree, even if you swear at each other because you think each other is crazy, mature adults can shake hands and be friends and get on with their lives, which I think is so important, again, especially in these times. But the politics, Ron,
I worry about young girls. It happens all the time. People say it doesn't happen with incest. It does. Maybe not as much as people think. But and also rape. You have a girl go on a date with some guy and he rapes her. And to me, it's just not right to say that girls or women have to have a baby when something is not a voluntary action on their part. I just don't get it. And also, some people have bad health. They cannot sustain a pregnancy. And that these people don't even want to let doctors deal with them at all. It's to me, it's actually really, it's not just crazy. I think it's criminal.
With the first ladies, there was no secret that Barbara Bush, and I believe Laura Bush, and Betty Ford did not see eye to eye with their presidential husbands about this issue.
That's correct.
As a spouse, you want to support your husband, especially if he's the president, but these women felt very strongly about these issues. We're going to try to get to that later in the program. I did want to ask you, I'm allowed one controversial question, Ron. It's not really, I'm not providing an opinion. I'm just going to ask you a question, but it might ruffle your feathers a bit. But I want to hear your answer because you can give a better answer than I can. There's no secret that your governor, who you like his name, but you don't like his politics and you don't like him, is considered to be a front runner for the presidential nomination for Republicans in 2024. Do you see him as a viable candidate? I know you don't like him. I understand that. But do you think he has a chance? Do you think he might be our next president? Or is the whole thing a pigment of someone's imagination, as they say?
Yes, but if Donald Trump runs the way it looks now, he would be the nominee, and that's horrifying. But Ron DeSantis is in a way more dangerous, I think, because he's very smart, he's young, and you know he copies a lot of Trump isms. Like when he signs a bill, he'll show the signature to everybody like a show and tell, which is what Trump did, which I think is obscene because Joe Biden doesn't show signatures. Neither did George W. Bush or Barack Obama. It's infantile behavior. It's crazy. But I think he's smart, and in that sense, I think he's dangerous. But he has now just gone ahead and indeed dismissed the prosecutor in one of the central Florida counties because that prosecutor said he would not pursue cases against women or doctors on abortions, and that's the state law now, and so he fired him. But how can you fire someone who's been elected? He wasn't appointed by DeSantis. He was elected, and to me that's abuse of power, and it's going to be a court case. So I'm furious because I think the man is a danger to the country and the world. And I have friends who call him DeSatan, not DeSantis. And then people joke about Charlie Crist, the former governor. Of course, Crist, not Christ, but people joke about Jesus fighting against Satan. So you laugh about it. But it's not funny. I'm voting for Charlie Crist, and I hope Charlie Crist can win the governorship.
Is that legal? You can fire someone who is voted by the people. I didn't think you could even do that, but
I don't think it is. But he's also set rules about teaching, even on the college level for state university, about you're not supposed to discuss race, you're not supposed to discuss sexuality. Well, I'm telling you, I spoke to my son today, and he said, "Dad, you teach the way you teach the reality of presence and race, because they certainly have to talk about Japanese Americans, Native Americans, and slavery and segregation and Wilson being a sick." Well, and he said, if for some reason that forces you out, so be it. You know, you've had 50 years, you want to stay on, but you don't give in. You know, and I'm not going to change what I say at all. But it worries me because there shouldn't be such promotion of censorship going on. And that's what's going on. And not just in Florida, also in Texas and many other states, and particularly for the elementary, middle, and high school. You have people who are quitting because that's why you have the shortage of teachers. And also we have cases of people who are lesbian or gay, and they feel they can't teach. One particular woman in Miami quit. I mean, this is crazy. I just think it's very dangerous, and it's not just him, but it certainly affects Florida and Texas and other states like that, and it's very upsetting and very, very emotional in my mind. I'm just worried about it, but my son says to me, don't get your ire up, just do your thing, and if you have to leave, you leave, you know. I guess that's the way I'm going to have to look at it, but I never had to fear it in 50 years, and shouldn't have to fear that now.
So with respect to a fellow Ron, one of Italian ancestry, I believe, in Tallahassee,
yes,
Florida.
In my mind, he's as bad as Ron Johnson, senator from Wisconsin, who's running again. And, you know, I'm not a big fan of people named Ron right now.
You see him as a possible presidential candidate or winner, but you're obviously less than thrilled about the thought. Would that sum it up?
Yes.
Okay. Ask you about your teaching, and we've talked offline, off the air, whatever the word would be, about requirements of what you teach, what you are not allowed to teach, even at the university level.
Well, that's what they're claiming. They don't say exactly what, but they just said be aware of the state law, which is trying to control, but they don't actually tell you what to say or do it. I'm not bringing it up to the department chair. I'm just going to teach my classes.
That was my question.
Have you
and the department chair, the dean, the president, have you had meetings? Has this person, your called?
No, there's been no meetings and no discussion. And the guy really likes me. I don't think there's going to be a problem. But I guess a lot depends if students complain. You know, if students complain. But it depends how you define complaining. I don't think most of the students would make an issue. And if one or two did at the end of the term, I don't think that's a big deal. I mean, I had one person last term who did, and of course you all know who it is, who said he didn't like the way I covered Reagan, Trump, and the second Bush. Just one sentence. Never heard a thing about it after. You know, I give both sides. I give the plus and the minus. I actually gave some pluses to all of them, but I made it clear that I thought they were much more negative, particularly with Bush and Trump, more than even Reagan. But, you know, it could be a problem in the political atmosphere we have now. I hope not, but I guess if it comes down to it, if I'm told that what I've done is unacceptable, and, you know, then I'll just... then I may have to finally quit completely. But I don't want to. I want to continue to do one course a term in the fall and spring, and hopefully I'll be able to.
We're talking with Dr. Ron Feinman, regular guest here at The Talking Place, WWGH, about his college teaching career and maybe some constraints that the governor wants to put on his curriculum and similar indulgences. We're going to talk more about presidents and first ladies because he is a walking encyclopedia thereof.
Not quite.
Ron, would you say your college does lean more to the left? A lot of your humanities departments do. Is that the general...
No, I'm not sure. I don't know them all, but I would think that it is more... it's not very conservative. There were a couple of people... There was one person in the political science department who just retired. He was the right age to retire. And I got the feeling from others that they weren't sorry they was leaving. And he and I used to debate sometimes in a friendly way. He was very right-wing. But most everybody else is either I don't know or... I would say, even in the history department as well as political science, most people certainly are at least to the center or a little to the left.
But you want to teach history without your own personal bias, but it's impossible not to put some bias in there. And your students read your website, The Progressive Professor. They see
I decided I'm not going to announce it to the class like I used to. If they find it, fine, but I'm not going to promote the idea of my blog or even History News Network, where I also write articles. I think it's best I don't bring it up. If they find me, that's fine, but I'm not going to announce that.
You know, your name isn't Smith, so I'm sure they search for you online, and there you go.
Well, they might, but I'm not going to talk about it. You know? And if they bring it up, I think if they bring it up in class, I'll say, you want to talk about it, come to the office hour. That's when I'll talk about it, not in the class. You know?
We've discussed, you have students who don't agree with you politically, some who are very much to the right, some that are probably more to the left than you are. You're not an extreme left person.
Yes. Well, I've never had people get really angry or annoyed with me over my 50 years. I just know some people, we've had disagreements, but it's been agreeably disagreeing.
That's the way it should be. If we all agree,
the
world would be a pretty boring place as far as I'm concerned. But it's not going to affect how you grade somebody. You've had people where you've been there, I assume their PhD advisor, and they maybe have written papers that had opinions not consistent with yours. And if anything, that's better because how does somebody prove an argument? They're providing.
Yes, I don't judge people based on political views, no. I never have in class. It's just that I do say things that are not positive. I don't make every president be wonderful. I point out the positives and the negatives. I go through every single one of them, even William Henry Harrison.
It's just fascinating, though, that in the humanities, the research documents, the theses, will by nature have an opinion, where in the sciences, more my field, of course, you're making a thesis. You are saying things that may not agree with what your professors believe or something that's new information, or even maybe naming a reaction or a chemical or naming a scientific or engineering process. But with the humanities, you might write a paper that says, well, Donald Trump was the greatest president ever, and you write about that. And what would make it fun, Ron, is you were going to critique that paper, and although you might not agree with the conclusion, you could possibly see the students' points. And I guess that's kind of
as long as he makes good arguments. And actually, I do make positive and negative on everybody. You know, I do. I'm just not going to say they're equal in the balance. You know, it's very hard because some presidents stand out more than others in a positive way. But even the positive ones, like FDR, I point out there are plenty of things to criticize FDR about, the Japanese Americans, the attempt to to pack the court. The fact that he didn't do enough about the Holocaust. You know, so even people I admire and are higher ranked, there's still going to be things that are negative. So it's the same with the ones who I think are rated lower. You know, that they always have some positives.
Now, speaking of presidential rankings, there are many resources on social media about who was the best president, who was the worst president, who are the presidents where the opinions tend to change every time you poll somebody. Not surprisingly, Lincoln is normally number one.
Yes, I wanted to mention the Siena College Research Institute. They just rated Franklin Roosevelt first and Lincoln second.
Do you agree with that? Roosevelt being more recent.
I'm a big FDR fan, but I would usually think of Lincoln as first, but not very much difference. They're both so significant, the Civil War, and then the Great Depression, World War II. So anyway, but he's rated first, Lincoln second, Washington is third, then comes Theodore Roosevelt, is usually rated about there, although some people think he didn't have any crisis on the level of others that he should be that high, but he's rated fourth. Jefferson is fifth. That's a little high, I think, Jefferson. And there's a lot of things to say against Jefferson, by the way. Eisenhower is sixth in this listing in 2022. Truman is seventh, and I'm not sure I'd put Eisenhower ahead of Truman, but that's the way it is. And then Lyndon Johnson reached the top 10, which is quite an amazing thing after all the turmoil of Vietnam and everything else, but he's reached the top 10 is number 8. Kennedy is 9th, so he's ahead of Kennedy, which I think upsets Kennedy lovers. And Madison is 10th. I'm not sure I put Madison in the top 10, but that's what the actual listing is. And I was one of the participants in this. It was 143 people that participated, it turns out, and I was one of them. But this is the sum total.
Now, Eisenhower and Donald Trump have something in common. They didn't have any elected political experience, though Eisenhower was a high-ranking military person. Mm-hmm. And Eisenhower ranks very high, and we haven't gotten to the bottom of the list, but I imagine Donald is pretty close to there. And
well, actually, talking about that, Donald Trump ends up third from the bottom in this list. You know, what happens is it turns out that Andrew Johnson is rated the worst. Usually it's James Buchanan, but this time it's Andrew Johnson, then James Buchanan, then Trump, and then, you know, and then comes Warren G. Harding and Franklin Pierce. So he's ahead of those two, but he's, you know, but the point is Johnson and Buchanan are the only ones that are worse than him in this ranking.
And we have the two show business presidents. Of course, that would be the Donald and the one who shares your first name, Ron. And Reagan, you know, he's someone who seems to jump around a lot. One of the two recent presidents, I think, along with Carter. Every time you get a poll, it's a little different. You hear different opinions, a different ranking. Where is Reagan ranking on this most recent
poll? Reagan, actually, in this poll, is rated quite low. He's 18th. But in the C-SPAN poll, he's, I think, number 10. So it depends on the group and how they look at it. You know, I don't know if I would rate Reagan that low, 18th, but he is actually 18th on this Siena Research poll.
It's still...
Yeah, but it's all based on the people involved and what they say, you know.
It's still in the upper half, right? Just above the middle.
Yeah.
So Donald.
Now, interestingly, Carter is in the. Let me. I'm not exactly sure the exact spot, but he's in the 20s. But he used to be either above or behind Ford. Now Ford is quite a bit lower. He's in the lower 20s, like 28. So Carter is finally. Right. It's always been a debate: who's better, Carter or Ford? That's a very big question.
Yeah. Interestingly, say, not having elected political experience.
I'm looking now. Yeah. And Ford is 30th. I don't think I'd agree with that. I would put Ford higher.
So,
not higher than Carter necessarily, but higher than 30th. He's been going down, at least in this poll. But every poll is different, you know.
So, interestingly, not having elected political experience would be good for Eisenhower and didn't seem to help Trump, as Eisenhower ranked rather high. I would imagine the military experience helped him. And he had a good vice president, Richard Nixon, before all the stuff happened. Nixon was certainly somebody who I think provided good insight into the office and was a rising star and a very moderate Republican.
I wanted to say about Nixon, forgetting about what happened later, is that he actually revolutionized the vice presidency because Eisenhower allowed him to, and also Eisenhower had a few illnesses, and Nixon became a very activist vice president and changed the that he really was a transformational vice president. But the next two, Johnson and Humphrey, were not utilized well by Kennedy and Johnson, and neither really was, well, Spiro Agnew was a disaster, and then Nelson Rockefeller was not very effective, but then Walter Mondale really became what's regarded by scholars as the best, most engaged, most active, most intimate vice president of them all, Walter Mondale under Jimmy Carter.
Certainly the vice president has been a big topic. You and I have talked about it many times. I was even on the Sunday show that you used to be on talking about vice presidents and whether our current vice president is a weak VP or strong. That's certainly
well, she's got a difficult position because she's a woman and she's mixed race, and that adds two extra things that are new. And I, you know, it's hard to say at this point how she'll end up looking. But to me, Mike Pence was except for January 6th, he was a very weak vice president. So I don't think he will rank very well in history, except for that.
And
but he's not appreciated for that by Republicans, as you know.
Of course, our current vice president, current president, was a vice president. Boy, this is getting a little confusing. So the role of the VP, certainly, even in my lifetime, which began, yes, during the Johnson administration, Lyndon, not Andrew, has evolved quite a bit. But
that actually scholars would probably say Joe Biden was the second best vice president in as far as influence and involvement after Walter Mondale, and I think I would agree. And third best would be Al Gore, but not as much. I always say about Al Gore that he was competing with someone else, and he said, "Who's that?" Hillary Clinton. It was like almost like a you know, three people fighting in a marriage. And then, of course, when Bill Clinton got involved in a sex scandal, Gore backed away from him and then didn't utilize him in the 2000 election. So, but and then they were furious at each other after the election. But I think until then, until at least 1998, I think Clinton was very actively engaged, but I think Joe Biden more so.
So with Reagan, Ron, do you see him continuing to jump around poll by poll? Whereas some presidents, their ranking is not likely to change too much. Would you maybe?
Well,
maybe
actually, he's usually been in the top 10 or 11 or 12, but suddenly on this poll, he's 18th. I'm not sure exactly why. You know, who knows? It's 143 people together and how it all comes out. I don't know, but it's a little startling that he's that low, because I would not even argue he belongs that low. I would say probably the top third, meaning somewhere in the top 13 or 14.
I'd almost say, and again, I'm not looking at, let me know if you agree with me on this, Ron, not looking at whether you like the person or you like...
Well, he's likable. One thing about Ronald Reagan, he was likable.
That's what I'm getting at, or you like his viewpoints. Our current and most recent president, I don't believe, are good leaders. And I'm not talking about issues. They're just not good leaders. You don't really take them that seriously. But with Reagan, even if you don't like him, and I didn't like a lot of his views, I like some of them. But loved a sense of humor. He was someone, rebel rouser of sorts, and was a really good leader. And I think we need more of that. Again, regardless of what you think about, and I'm not sure Obama was the greatest leader either. And George Bush, I think. I mean, compared to Reagan,
I think Obama is the one that stands out the most since Reagan, as far as popularity and coming across well, though. Don't you think?
Right. Yeah, in terms of someone you'll hear, and it sounds like it's the president, and Clinton also. But the others, you know.
Clinton less, because Clinton, I always thought, was phony. There's something about him. I guess I never really trusted him from the time of Jennifer Flowers, because Gary Hart was pushed out because he had a relationship with a woman. And actually, I think he would have made a really good president. But somehow Clinton, I said, oh, he's done in early 92, but he wasn't. But I think he harmed the office a great deal with his love life.
I'm not
a Puritan. I'm just saying you shouldn't be doing that when you're in the White House, even if you did it before, you know.
Do you think we're going to want our next president to be someone you think of as a strong leader, somebody with Reagan's sense of humor, Nixon also, and Clinton? I mean, I think we would agree those in the last half century are the three presidents
and
that seem to be the best
leaders. And Obama also has a good sense of humor, I'd say. No?
Yeah, and secondarily Obama, I would say.
Yeah. I have no idea what's going to happen. You know, I do think there is a chance that neither Trump or Biden will be the nominees, and I really think it could be new people coming in. And there's an argument now. Maureen Dowd of the New York Times said that Joe should not run, and I think it's a very, very good article in the New York Times today or yesterday, because she said He's done what he needed to do to stabilize things and move forward, and he's gotten some things accomplished. But honestly, he shouldn't do what Ruth Bader Ginsburg did, refuse to give up, and then we know what happened. She dies in office, and we get Amy Coney Barrett. So it's a good argument, because the odds of him being around for 6.5 more years and being capable, I don't know. You know, it's because some people will be. I mean, Maxine Waters, the congresswoman, is 84, and she's fine. I'm just giving an example. It's usually women. But I just think it's a danger to have a president going much beyond the early 80s. And as it is, Joe will be here for 2.5 more years if he lives on and is able to do the job. So, you know, even though I admire him and I wanted him to be elected, I really think it's time for a change. And I think what she says, you don't want to have a Ruth Bader Ginsburg situation. I would tend to agree.
We will address that probably in a future presentation.
Yeah.
Joe Biden, is he too old? What could happen as he is mid-80s?
I wish he had been elected in 16. I think if he had not had his son die, he possibly would have stopped Hillary Clinton and might have won, and then he would be finishing a second term now. So that would be a little different, you know.
Adam here on The Talking Place with Dr. Ron Feinman, our official presidentologist, talking about some recent presidential history, presidential rankings, and in the last 10 minutes, we're going to talk about the First Ladies, one of my favorite topics.
Listen, I wanted to mention, Siena Research Institute has had surveys of First Ladies five times, 82, 93, 03, 08, and 14. They haven't done it since. So it does not include Mrs. Trump or Mrs. Biden, but everybody else is covered. So if you want, I'll go through the list of the top 10 First Ladies up through Michelle Obama. You want me to do that?
Well, in a minute, just wanted to ask you about Donald J for John Trump Jr. I think he's a junior, just like Biden.
Yes.
But of course, he's one of a kind anyway. Do you see him as permanently being in bottom three or bottom five? Could he ever move up the way Carter, Reagan, and some others, or will he perpetually be thought of as a low-end president?
Well, it's hard to know long-term, but I think he has done, I think, and not just me, so much damage by what happened on January 6th and all the abuse of power that I see throughout, that he makes Richard Nixon look like a choir boy by comparison. And I think Richard Nixon had a lot more positives, although he had negatives. But I think even he, if he was alive, would say, how do you get away with all this? You know, I do not think he'll ever get out of the bottom 10, let's say. He's in the bottom three now, but I don't think he could ever reach higher than the low 30s, meaning 37, 38, or lower, like up to the 40s. I don't think so. But who can predict long term? You never know.
So you were one of the people they polled, right?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Where did you rank Donald? Where did you rank FDR? And where did you rank Lincoln, if I may ask? Those are the three I'm curious
about. I ranked Lincoln first, FDR second. And Trump, I think I put him just ahead of Buchanan, and I think I put Buchanan last, but it ended up being Andrew Johnson. They're both horrendous. I think Andrew Johnson is more despicable as a human being, let's say, than James Buchanan, really, and a real white supremacist. Buchanan really was. He was just ineffective. But I put him so, like, toward the bottom. But I'm one out of 143, so my vote is not the... Obviously, everybody pretty much rated him low, because he wouldn't be in that ranking otherwise.
So Buchanan was pretty bad.
Yes, well, the two presidents around Lincoln, and I wrote an article on History News Network that the way a lot of times a president is judged beyond everything else is who comes before him and who comes after him. So Lincoln's after Buchanan and before Andrew Johnson, and I'm going to point out Obama's after Bush and before Trump. So that makes Obama look better when you compare him to Bush 2 and to Trump on both sides of him. And the same thing, even with somebody who's not as bad, William Howard Taft, between Theodore Roosevelt and Wilson, you know, doesn't look as good. That's just the luck of where you ranked as far as, you know, in order of succession.
With Honest Abe, for those who have not read Ron's book, please do. Many libraries carry it. I read it. It was in my local library. And I quite proudly even posted a picture checking out the book and reading it.
Yes, thank you.
And you'll hear Ron write about Lincoln's life and his wife. He had a lot of struggles.
Did he?
A lot of demons to deal with. His wife wasn't really the most pleasant person in the world. And he overcame those struggles. And, I mean, he's an American hero. And
yes. Yeah, I wanted to go through that list of the top 10 First Ladies, see what you think of it from 2014. Can I do that now?
Yes, let's go ahead and talk about one of my favorite topics, the First Ladies. And I want to give my my answers.
Okay, number one, and in every one of the five polls, she's number one, is Eleanor Roosevelt. Interesting. Second is Abigail Adams, although not back in the time of Hillary Clinton. She's rated third then, but otherwise she's always number two, Abigail Adams. Third is Jacqueline Kennedy. Fourth, interestingly, is Dolly Madison. I think that's quite funny. Fifth is Michelle Obama. Again, this is only through Obama, not the last two. Fifth is Michelle Obama. Hillary Clinton is sixth, so she has slipped. You know, Lady Bird Johnson, seven. Betty Ford, eight. Martha Washington, nine. And Rosalind Carter, 10. So again, Eleanor Roosevelt, Abigail Adams, Jacqueline Kennedy, Dolly Madison, Michelle Obama, Hillary Clinton, Lady Bird Johnson, Betty Ford, Martha Washington, and Rosalind Carter. So what do you think of that?
Well, you know, for my lifetime, I give kind of a comedy list. We have most muscular. We have, of course, Michelle Obama. Best hair. Best user of hairspray, of course, the beloved Betty Ford. Best Southern accent, of course, that would be Rosalind Carter, who still has that lovely Southern drawl. I guess most wanting to have her husband's job would be Hillary Clinton. And, you know, generally best looking, of course, Melania Trump. So that's my list.
Oh, God, no, Jacqueline Kennedy.
That's my comedy list. But I think you and I would agree, yeah. Ron, most muscular. Do we agree on Michelle Obama?
I guess so, yeah. Of course, some people think that she's a man, or that she's a transgender male, which is horrible that people say that.
No, I don't believe that, but, you know, she... I wouldn't mind going to the gym with her. I guess I'm thinking of like...
Obama on a couch with some guy with his arm around him. People say, oh, he's gay. No, he's not.
I would think,
yeah.
People
put the arm around someone in a photograph. It doesn't mean anything.
I guess if I were to list another way of looking at the comedy list, if I were to list activities that I would like to do with some of the first ladies, go to the gym, of course, would be Michelle Obama. And
yes.
I don't want to say this in a negative way because she's done so much for addiction, but best... First lady to go out and have a drink with, Betty. But again, I want to let folks know that she has done amazing things, and that's posthumously, in addition to when she was alive, for counteracting the serious problem we have with substance abuse. But she also liked to joke around. She was on Mary Tyler Moore, and my understanding, when she was on the show, she had had a few. And so that kind of made it a bit challenging to work with. But I think Betty would be laughing up in heaven if she heard this. So, yeah, best first lady.
Yeah, she's my favorite Republican first lady. I've always liked her. And by the way, in this list of those 10, she's the only Republican first lady. The others are Democrats or they're Federalists or Democratic Republicans or the earlier ones like Martha Washington, Abigail Adams, and Dolly Madison. All the others are Democrats except for Betty Ford. And only on one list, Barbara Bush in the, you know, after she left office, Barbara Bush is rated eighth. She's the only other one. Nancy Reagan's not mentioned. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, well, maybe she would be the best one to say no to, or if you had to say no.
Yes.
Again, just a little humor doesn't hurt. It's actually the best medicine as far as I'm concerned. Best first lady to go clothes shopping with. I'll go ahead and give that to Melania or Jackie Kennedy. Kind of a tough call. You probably would say Jackie Kennedy.
Yes. I also wonder, interesting, to imagine a situation where Jacqueline Kennedy met Melania Trump. What would she think?
They would be two very well-dressed ladies and two very attractive ladies. I'll say that.
But
much.
I'd like to know what's in their head or what's in Jacqueline Kennedy's head. I don't think it would be very nice.
It would be a fascinating study of human interaction.
Even to look at their face when they met each other, you know?
And last but not least, best first lady to have as your attorney. Although Michelle, I think, deserves consideration, I'll go for Hillary.
Yeah. Well, she was considered one of the top 100 lawyers at the time that she became first lady, yes.
And I guess best first lady to have on your professorial staff, of course, that would be Dr. Jill Biden, the first first lady with a PhD degree, if I'm not mistaken. So that's kind of an obvious answer.
Actually, it's an EDD, I think, not a PhD, but it's still can be called doctor.
Yeah. Close.
Now, that's an issue. Should she be calling herself that? I don't see a problem with it. I don't think it's essential. I don't go around calling myself Dr. Feynman outside the classroom. And, in fact, even in the classroom, somebody will say, do we have to call you that? I said, no, just don't call me a dirty name, and they laugh. So I don't insist. I just introduce myself.
Maybe, like, Dr. Feynman. To honor my radio skills, call her DJ for Dr. Jill. Maybe that would be a good name.
Well, yes.
On that note,
we will... Look at Jill, by the way, also. You like her?
I would say... I admire her. It's tricky, you know, being a first lady, and she's still teaching. Yeah. You know, very smart, not bad looking either. I'll say that
she's
much.
She's 70 years old too.
Aging very well. So
yes,
maybe she should take up. She looks like she's in very good shape. Maybe she should take up bicycle instruction also. What do you think? As a best bicycle instructor for a first lady.
Well, at least, you know, Joe may have fallen, but at least he bikes. Well, Donald Trump couldn't get on a bike.
Always leave him laughing, as they say. And as my mama would tell me, time flies when you're having fun. Ron, it's been great having you back. We will have you back again soon, maybe in a week or two or three, and talk
okay,
more.
Okay, whatever. Thank you so much. It was a lot of fun. So I'll just finish by saying, in every poll, however, Eleanor Roosevelt's number one as first lady, and nobody would really debate that, I think. Right. Although maybe a right wingers would, but to me, there's no question she was the best.
Yeah, she added a lot to the office and her legacy.
And was there longer than anybody, 12 years and 39 days, just like her husband.
Well, thank you again, Ron, for being here on The Talking Place. Have a great rest of your day. And again, listeners, please visit theprogressiveprofessor.com.
And also History News Network under Ronald L. Feynman.
Adam Lepp here on The Talking Place, WWGH.